I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, President Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation 150 years ago. We'll fill in some of the blanks that you might not remember from your high school history class or might never have actually learned about this important document. We'll talk with Lonnie Bunch, who's heading up the team creating the new Museum of African American History and Culture on the National Mall. That conversation is just ahead. But first, it's time for the Beauty Shop. That's where we get a fresh cut on the week's news with a panel of women writers, journalists, and commentators. Sitting in the chairs for a new do this week are Viviana Hurtado, blogger-in-chief of the website The Wise Latina Club. Bridget Johnson is Washington, D.C. editor for PJ Media. That's a conservative libertarian commentary and news website. And Mary Louise Kelly is former NPR intelligence correspondent. She's also an author writing a book. They're all here in our Washington, D.C. studio. And joining us from St. Louis is Danielle Belton. She is editor-at-large of Clutch Magazine Online. She's also the head writer for Don't Sleep. That's a show on BET hosted by T.J. Holmes. Welcome back, everybody. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Michelle.
We wanted to start off by talking about something that I understand that why a lot of people might think, what does this have to do with me? But it's, you know, the President Obama obviously reelected to a second term, assembling his new team of advisors, his cabinet. He kicked off the week with two key national security nominations. He chose John Brennan, currently his top counterterrorism advisor, to head the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA. And he picked former Republican Senator Chuck Hagel to be the new Secretary of Defense. I just want to play a short clip from his announcement.
Chuck Hagel is the leader that our troops deserve. He is an American patriot. He enlisted in the Army and volunteered for Vietnam. As a young private and then a sergeant, he served with honor alongside his own brother.
Sounds good, right? Well, this goes back to what I said at first, that people might be asking, well, why are you talking about this? This has attracted a furious reaction from both the right and the left, and we want to talk about why that is and whether this is actually a proxy for something else. So, Bridget Johnson, why don't you start us off from the right? Furious reaction. Why?
You got a few angles coming at Chuck Hagel. And it's really interesting because he was in the Senate not that long ago. So a lot of the opposition is coming from guys who recently served with him, who, you know, were privy to the sort of backroom conversations, Senate dining room conversations that go on. You've got a lot of concern about his stance on Israel, and that comes also from pro-Israel Democrats like Senator Ben Cardin. He's made references like to the Jewish lobby, which is really offensive to groups like the ADL, et cetera. You've got his stance on Iran, which is going more for internationally accepted sanctions and is basically taking a military option off the table as Iran continues to propel towards its nuclear capability. And then you have some left-field concerns brought up, too, like Senator Bob Corker is concerned about his stance on the modernization of our nuclear arsenal. So there are lots of concerns coming from all
just,
sorts
just one,
of...
Just one point of clarification. The ADL, the Anti-Defamation League, says it's not actually opposing Chuck Hagel's nomination. It will not oppose his nomination. But
he specifically said that he needs to address what he said because it's hurtful to Jewish people to hear that. So.
Now, Mary Louise, you actually covered the Pentagon in a previous life.
Yes.
There's what people say and then there's what they really mean. So why don't you tell us what people really mean? What do you think this is really all about?
I personally think some of this is much ado about nothing. Not that it doesn't matter what the future Secretary of Defense's views are on everything from Israel to Iran to nuclear weapons and so forth. But some of the comments that have been criticized have been taken out of context. We've seen the White House has come out and defended the nomination saying, look, Dick Cheney, when he was vice president, talked about the Jewish lobby and used that term. So you can find it offensive, but let's not pin it on one particular person whose views you may or may not disagree with. The other point of view I would bring out is just that some of those comments are from years ago. If you look at Iran, for example, some of the comments that have been generating so much criticism were made in 2008, 2009. Since then, the situation has changed. Not that Chuck Hagel should not be called to account for what his views are, not that we have great clarity over how they may have evolved, but clearly the situation in Iran has evolved. I think if you asked President Obama 4 years ago, what's the best way to deal with Iran, you might hear a different answer than what we're now seeing the administration pursue as a policy. So I think this is the rare confirmation hearing where we may actually get some real illumination on what Chuck Hagel's views are. He's been serving in an advisory role, but he's been out of the public eye as a senator for a few years. I'm really curious what he has to say about some of these things now.
The progressive columnist David Sirota, writing in Salon, said that The real issue here is that when a nominee is seen as a threat to the lucrative business of permanent war, a business whose profit margins, employment footprint across America, campaign contributions, and think tank underwriting make it by far the most powerful pillar of the power structure, he's saying that the real issue here is that Chuck Hagel is an advocate of a smaller military presence, and that's really what it's about. It's really follow the money. Do you credit that? You think that's true?
I do think that's true. We've seen Chuck Hagel not walk back from any of the comments he's made about there is a bloated defense bureaucracy. The budget is going to be tightened. That's clearly going to be one of his top priorities, if not his very top priority, if he's confirmed as Secretary of Defense. That's a huge lobby. If you want to talk lobbies, the defense lobby, the military establishment carries a huge amount of weight and will fight tooth and nail against any cuts. Clearly, that's going to happen. And having somebody who seems to hew to what President Obama's point of view is in terms of these cuts are necessary in a time of financial hard times is probably something that's not a bad thing.
Well, I do want to point out that the criticism is not all from the right. It's also from the left, if you can call it that. There's a group, Log Cabin Republicans, frequent guests on this program, who are a lobby within the Republican Party advocating for LGBT issues, have been critical of the fact that Chuck Hagel some years ago described a nominee to be U.S. ambassador to Luxembourg as, quote, openly, aggressively gay, and said that that was an inhibiting factor to do an effective job. And they felt that that was offensive. And that he's also walked that back many. I mean, this is years ago, and he's also apologized for that. Chuck Hagel has apologized for that comment and said that, you know, his views have evolved. But Viviana, you are also critical of this. You have something to say about the whole sort of package of the president's nominees in this area. What's your view on this?
Right, whether it's John Kerry to state, Chuck Hagel, as we've been talking about, to head up defense, or John Brennan over at CIA, or, you know, John Doe to head up whatever. That's the point. I am not seeing Juan Doe. And we're seeing
or
John
Juanita.
Doe. Exactly, or Juanita Doe.
Or Juanita Doe.
And I guess what I'm ultimately what's important here is this falls squarely under the jurisdiction of presidential prerogative. The president is going to choose who he believes is the most qualified. And here's another thing that's really important, who he trusts. Who is he the most comfortable with? But the White House has also said that the president firmly believes that it's important to have a cabinet, the most innermost circle to this president, representative of America. And up to now, not just with the picks, but even the rumors that have been flying back and forth, I haven't seen anybody from a diverse community, with the exception of UN Ambassador Susan Rice, and we know what happened with her, and certainly no Latinos. That's a problem, and I see it because, firstly, this is an emerging community that helped, that was a key part of the coalition that delivered re-election to this president. And so I will really encourage the president and his advisors to look beyond the usual suspects. I want to encourage the Latino advocacy community to not, that can in some cases be a little too close to this administration, to maybe get a little bit of a distance and to start upping the pressure to really show
for who?
This.
But where's name names, though? I mean, it's what you can't, you know, replace somebody with nobody. I mean,
right.
No, part of the question is, are there people who are well-positioned, who have the qualifications and the experience to be effective in these roles?
I mean,
one of the things that was interesting to me is people say, well, you know what, that this national security team will be less diverse than the team assembled by George W. Bush. That is true at the top level. But what was also interesting to me at the mid-level and at the lower level, what did that bench look like? And
right.
That was not a diverse bench.
In a forthcoming article that actually we published today in my blog, The Wise Latina Club, and in Fox News Latino, I do give up some names, some people who may not want it and may not even be interested or may not even be a listed consideration by this administration. But, for example, Bill Richardson is in North Korea right now.
The former governor of New Mexico. Former Secretary in the Clinton administration, former Energy Secretary.
Exactly, and former
U.S.
ambassador to the U.N., and a rival as well of President Obama in 2008 as presidential candidate. You know, in the private sector, we have the CEO and president of the USHCC, United States Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, Javier Palomares. In Congress, we have, you know, numerous people, including Congressman Javier Becerra, Senator Bob Menendez. There's a lot of reasons, and I name others. There's a lot of reasons why people would not want to serve or won't even be asked. But I would just encourage this president and his innermost circle to think outside the box.
Danielle Belton, do you want to weigh in on this before we move on?
I think the reality is that we're dealing with systematic issues of racism and sexism, where it's not so much the president's that we have a whole apparatus, a whole system in place where the people who are in charge and the people who are secondary in charge who are picking people are often male and are often white. And either sometimes on purpose and sometimes inadvertently so, they pick those that they feel the most close to, the most similar to themselves, which are other white men. So you just have a glut of people that you have to get through as a minority, as a woman, to get past, to get noticed, to get that attention, as well as other issues that kind of keep you from these sort of spaces.
It is worth noting, though, and I mean, I know people have sort of joked about this, that when Anne Marie Slaughter, who is the former Clinton administration secretary, official in the State Department, who's made such a splash with her writings about the barriers to women rising to the top levels in foreign policy, national security, and other fields, when she mentioned that John Kerry, the Massachusetts senator, would likely be nominated as Secretary of State, she said, one of her sons said, oh, a guy can be Secretary of State?
Good one.
I mean, it is worth noting that this has not been, you know, there was Madeleine Albright, there was Condoleezza Rice, and before, there was Colin Powell. I mean, so this would be the first white guy Secretary of State in a long time. I do think that is kind of worth mentioning. Well, moving, I want to say from the sublime to the ridiculous, but I'm not sure that's quite right either. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to our Beauty Shop Roundtable with Danielle Belton, editor-at-large of Clutch Magazine Online, Viviana Hurtado, blogger-in-chief at the Wise Latina Club, former NPR intelligence correspondent Mary Louise Kelly, and Bridget Johnson, Washington, D.C., editor at PJ Media. Reality shows. Okay, don't throw your shoes at me. But there are so many of them this season, and people are asking, have we reached a new low? And I'll just play you a short clip from a show called Buck Wild.
Wait, what are we doing with a dump truck?
We're going to turn it into a swimming pool.
Ever since we've been little kids, we've been fixing stuff, building stuff. We ain't got much, but we have fun with what we got.
So that was a scene from the new show Buck Wild. It's kind of like kind of like Jersey Shore, although instead of like Italian American kids chugging beer, the show is on, you know, Appalachian youth chugging malt liquor and amusing themselves by doing stuff with trucks. And there's another one, All My Baby's Mamas, on the Oxygen Network. The show features rapper Shanti Lowe and the 10 different mothers of his 11 children. And I've described this to a couple of people. It's been really interesting to watch people's heads spin off their necks as they like just, ah! So Danielle Belton, what is your thought about this? Are we taking this too seriously or is this really just too much?
Well, it in some cases, yes and no. The reality is about reality shows, no pun intended, is that as long as people watch them and they're cheap to manufacture, they're going to be on TV. And the whole modus operandi with reality shows today is to be as sensational, as over the top, as ridiculous as possible. I mean, there is no low anymore. I don't know how much lower it can get. And, you know, All My Baby's Mamas is like, that sounds like a skit from the film Idiocracy, you know? Like, it's ow, you know, like.
It's Shorty Low. I'm sorry. It's Shorty Low. You hear that I still have a cold. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. My bad.
But
as you know, yeah. I mean, as some African American bloggers and commentators are just really disgusted. They say this is perpetuating this is just what we do not need. And similarly, remember, you know, there are a lot of Italian Americans who are really disgusted about Jersey Shore. And there are, you know, political figures who are disgusted about Buck Wild, who are like, you know, this is not what we need. And I guess, I mean, obviously the First Amendment applies here. People can do what they want. But Danielle, are you disgusted or you just think, what, just don't watch it?
Well, it's like, on one hand, I am just as a human being, because it's just, like, I don't understand, like, being rewarded for that sort of behavior where you get a check at a TV show and notoriety and fame. The other side of it, where you have people concerned that, oh, people will watch this and they'll think that's how all Black people are, that I find a little ridiculous to me. If you meet somebody in 2013 who watches the show and assumes all Black people are that way, when you've got Obama in the White House, they go see movies with Will Smith in them, they go root LeBron on the court, I'm just like, you're ridiculous. You know better at this point. If you want to believe that's all Black people, that is on you. That's not on me to prove to you what kind of Black person I am by telling Shodi Lowe not to be on TV.
Or Appalachian people or whatever.
Exactly.
Bridget Johnson, you've disclosed that you have a secret passion for reality TV. Not a secret anymore. Which one and why?
I love Amish Mafia. And, you know,
really? How come?
It's so gangster. I mean, it's like Quentin Tarantino is remaking Witness in like the season finales tonight, and I know somebody's buggy's going to get busted up.
Oh, no.
I mean,
Why do you like it?
It's just entertaining. And also, you know, I read some local news reports from the Lancaster area, et cetera, and the people there find it entertaining too, because they don't see a lot of reality in it, but they see the entertainment in it. And I think people suspended their disbelief about reality TV a long time ago by the time the umpteenth Bachelor relationship didn't work out. So, you know, you see things like, yes, I also watched Flavor of Love when it was
on. Oh, no. I don't know. You might have to go into purgatory for a couple weeks on that. I don't know. I thought we were friends, but maybe not. Viviana, yeah. What do you think?
I don't watch reality television because I don't have time, although over the holiday, when we would put the baby down, I was with my sister, I had 2 hours, and so I would work out for 2 hours, and I was bored out of my mind, so I watched reality television. And I'm a big fan of Don't Be Tardy to the Party.
Oh, Mary Louise.
You're
safe here. You can tell us.
I mean, I think they've summed it up that any pretense that these shows, that reality TV has anything to do with reality, we let go a long time ago. I will say the thing that bugs me about this latest crop is the kids who are involved. You know, this is 10 moms and there are 11 children who are on this show. And yeah, I have a choice not to watch these shows if I don't like them. These adults, and I use the term loosely in that particular case, these adults made a choice. They get to sign up, be on the show, not be on the show, their choice. But I do, the kids thing bugs me because you just don't know how that's going to affect them 10 years down the road. Somebody made the point, I hope they use all the profits from that show to pay for all their therapy. And I'm on board with that.
Honey boo boo. Yes. If she's running for president 20 years from now, you heard it here first, okay? Viviana Hurtado is blogger in chief of the website The Wise Latina Club. Mary Louise Kelly is a former NPR intelligence correspondent. She's author of the soon to be released thriller Anonymous Sources. Bridget Johnson, Washington, D.C. editor for PJ Media here in D.C. From St. Louis, Danielle Belton, editor at large of Clutch Magazine Online. Thank you all so much.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.